the 24th chapter, and we read from the 13th verse, the story of the walk to Emmaus. Luke's Gospel, chapter 24, and verse 13. That very day, the day of the resurrection, two of them were going to a village named Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing together, Jesus himself drew near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What is this conversation which you are holding with each other as you walk?" And they stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, named Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only visitor to Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" And he said to them, "What things?" And they said to him, "Concerning Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and rulers delivered him up to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since this happened. Moreover, some women of our company amazed us. They were at the tomb early in the morning, did not find his body. And they came back saying that they had even seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. And he said to them, 'O foolish men, and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken, was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and enter into his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself." So they drew near to the village to which they were going. He appeared to be going further, but they constrained him, saying, "Stay with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is now far spent." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at table with them, he took the bread and blessed, and broke it, and gave it to them. And their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished out of their sight. They said to each other, "Did not our hearts burn within us while he talked to us on the road, while he opened to us the scriptures?" And they arose that same hour and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 gathered together, and those who were with them, who said, "The Lord has risen indeed, and has appeared to Simon." Then they told what had happened on the road, and how he was known to them in the breaking of the bread, And as they were saying this, Jesus himself stood among them, but they were startled and frightened, and supposed that they had seen a spirit. And he said to them, "Why are you troubled? And why do you questionings arise in your hearts? See my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Handle me and see. For a spirit has not flesh and bones, as you see that I have." And while they still disbelieved for joy and wondered, he said to them, "Have you anything here to eat?" They gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it and ate before them. Amen. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading of his holy word. Grant us an understanding of it. If you know the book of Ecclesiastes, you may know that one of the key words to an understanding of that rather dark and somewhat difficult book is the word better. For example, Solomon says in chapter 2 and verse 24 of the book, "There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil." In other words, to work hard and to live well are good things. There is nothing better for a man. You find it in chapter 3 and verse 22 of the same book. "There is nothing better than that a man should enjoy his work, for that is his lot." In other words, hard work and the enjoyment of it are things appointed by God. There is nothing better for a man. In chapter 4 and verse 6 of Ecclesiastes, "Better is a handful with quietness than two hands full of toil and striving after wind." In other words, dreaming dreams may be all very well, but better is a handful with quietness. In verse 9 of chapter 4, "Two are better than one." It's the origin of the old Scots proverb, "Twa heads are better than ane." And in verse 13 of the same chapter 4, a good word for young people: "Better is a poor and a wise youth than an aged and a foolish king who will no longer take advice." In other words, far better than an old fool who can't be told anything is a young man whose head is screwed on the right way. "Better is a poor and a wise youth than an aged and a foolish king who will no longer take advice." Chapter 6 and verse 9, "Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desire." In other words, dreaming dreams and seeing visions is all very fine, but better is the sight of the eyes. Chapter 7 and verse 1, "A good name is better than precious ointment." Chapter 7 and verse 2, "It is better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting." And then this jewel in the middle of all these betters: "Better is the end of a thing than the beginning of it." Or as we might say today, the end of the road is better than the journey. To have arrived home is better than to have traveled. and the person you are at the end of the road is the person who really matters. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning of it. And that could almost be the text for Cleopas and his friend as they walked the road to Emmaus. Because the road had started in Jerusalem. And it had started in what they saw as the despair and the hopelessness of Christ's trial and Christ's death. That's how it started. And it ended in their encounter with the living Christ in the breaking of bread. We usually call this story the road to Emmaus. But we could just as well call it the road from Jerusalem, because every road has two ends. And the road to Emmaus started in Jerusalem. There are two ends to the road. And at one end, you find broken hearts. And at the other end, you find burning hearts. Did not our hearts burn within us while he talked with us by the way? And this is a story which preaches a great evangelical message. The power of God to take broken hearts filled with disappointment and frustration and grief and convert them into burning hearts that burn because they have met the living Christ. Now, when Cleopas and his friends set out from Jerusalem, their hearts were broken. And their hearts were broken for two reasons. In the first place, they had failed to see that Jesus was more than a prophet, a great teacher of morals and of ethics. In verse 19, we read these words. Jesus said to them, "What things are you discussing?" And they said to him, "Concerning Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet." And anyone who looks at Jesus and sees in him no more than a great teacher is bound in the end of the day to finish up with a broken heart. It's the same mistake that the woman of Samaria made in the fourth chapter of John's Gospel. She ran to the village and she said to the villagers, "Come see a man." And then she said to Jesus, "Sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. And if anything in this world is calculated to drive a serious person to despair, it is the idea that Jesus is nothing more than a great moral teacher, a greater than Plato, or a greater than Socrates, or a greater than Aristotle. I'm convinced that just about the worst thing you could say about Jesus is that he is a great moral teacher. For as a matter of fact, that is not something that Jesus ever claimed for himself. You see, the teaching of Jesus is far harder than anything that any moralist has ever said. I can recall having a vehement argument with a lorry driver in Holy Town, my last parish. And his point was that he didn't like the Old Testament. He didn't mind the New Testament, but he couldn't stand the Old. And I said, my friend, if the choice is between Moses and Jesus, give me Moses any day. Because Moses said, thou shalt not kill. But Jesus said, it is enough to hate your brother and to think malicious thoughts of your brother. And if you think the thought, you have killed your brother. Give me Moses anytime. Moses said, thou shalt not commit adultery. Jesus said, it is enough to look and to think an unclean thought. Give me Moses any day. Moses said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, and a life for a life. But Jesus said, if anyone slaps you on the face, turn the other cheek. If anyone asks you to go a mile, go the second mile. Do good to those who persecute you, and pray for those who despitefully use you. You see, if you take Jesus only as a great teacher, his teaching will break your heart. And that was all that these men saw in Jesus, a prophet from Nazareth, a great teacher of morals and ethics. Their heart was broken. But their broken heart was broken for another reason. They really were men who were living in the past. Wonder if you noticed, as we read through the passage, there is a feeling of pastness in the words that they use. Look at verse 19 again. Concerning Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God. And in verse 20, how our chief priests and rulers delivered him up to death, crucified him. Verse 21, but we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. You see, these men were looking back to an old Jesus. They were looking back to the Christ they had known and with whom they had walked on the dusty roads of Palestine. And anyone who lives in the past like that is bound to have a broken heart, because Christ is alive. Christ is risen. Christ is on the move. It was one of the failings of Israel that she was always looking back to the past and living in a golden age. What did they say to Jesus? We have Abraham for our father. We know where Moses came from. And it's one of the great weaknesses in Christians, that they tend to be out of touch with the contemporary Christ, with the risen Christ, who's always marching on. And it's one of the weaknesses of Christians that they tend to live in a golden age and another world. I can recall when we were at university as divinity students, somebody started a fashion for reading the English Puritans. And that was the great craze. We fell head over heels in love with the English Puritans. And you know, we all but dressed in black clothes and knee breeches and tall black hats in our desire to be Puritans. Of course, it was just a fashion, and it was just a pose. But there are Christians who hark back to golden ages, back to Sankey and Moody, back to Spurgeon, back to Wesley, back to the Scottish Puritans, back to the English Puritans, back to the Reformers, or even back to the Middle Ages. Whereas you have to make Jesus Christ contemporary. He is God's man for today. Jesus Christ is up to date. He's not only God's man for today, he's God's man for tomorrow. Because the risen Christ is always marching on. And it's the duty of Christians to march with him. These men were living in the past. And there is nothing more calculated to break your heart than that. And Christ gave them, in place of their broken hearts, burning hearts. Look at verses 26 and 27. Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory? And beginning with Moses, that's to say the first five books of the Bible, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them in all the scriptures, the Old Testament scriptures, the things concerning himself. And if there is anything in this world calculated to give you a burning heart, it is seeing Christ in all the scriptures. And the picture here on the Emmaus Road is the picture of Christ with a Bible. And he's saying to these two men, now, look at this verse here. Now, that's me. And this verse here, that's me. I could well imagine he started at Genesis chapter 3 with the proto-evangel, the first sounding out of the good news of Christ. The seed of the woman shall bruise the serpent's head. I could see Christ's finger on Genesis 3 and 16, and I can hear his voice saying, see this verse? That's me. Then he would turn to Numbers, to the story of Balaam. This verse, there shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall arise in Israel, and unto him shall the gathering of the peoples be. And I can hear his voice. See this verse? That's me. Or Isaiah 53, or the servant songs in Isaiah, or Zechariah, The tribes of the earth shall mourn, and they shall look upon him whom they have pierced. And I can hear his voice saying, see this verse? That's me. Beginning at Moses and the prophets, he expounded to them in all the Old Testament scriptures the things concerning himself. I like the saying of Martin Luther, who said that the Old Testament was the swaddling bands of Jesus Christ. The Old Testament is a kind of cradle, and you look into the cradle and you see the baby, the swaddling bands of Jesus Christ. And if you want a burning heart, you must see Christ in all the scriptures. And secondly, if you want a burning heart, you must see Christ in the breaking of bread. Look at verse 30. When he was at table with them, he took the bread and blessed, and broke it and gave it to them. And their eyes were opened in the breaking of the bread, and they recognized him. If you want a burning heart, see Christ in the breaking of bread. We often speak about the sacrament of the Lord's Supper. But a sacrament is only an outward and a visible sign of an inner spiritual reality. The outward signs are bread and wine. The inner spiritual reality is fellowship with Christ. If you want a burning heart, see Christ in the breaking of bread. I recall speaking to some little children who didn't know the meaning of communion. They'd never been in a church. They knew nothing about sacraments. This is how I made it clear to them. I said, you know, this is God spelling it out loud and clear. I love you. Now you see, God has always been saying that. I love you. But here, with the outward signs of the inner reality, he's spelling it out loud and clear. I love you. If you've been at a wedding, you may recognize these words. By this sign, you take each other to have and to hold. Now you see, the sign in a wedding is the wedding ring. You could have a marriage without a wedding ring. It would still be a real marriage, even if the best man forgot the ring. But the ring is a sacramental sign of the union. And when the ring goes on, the minister says, by this sign, you take each other to have and to hold. And in that way, the bread and the wine are the outward signs of the inward union. I once remember reading the biography of John Wesley. And you know, Wesley was sent to America by the Methodist Church to preach the gospel to the Indians. And when he was over in America, he discovered that he didn't have a gospel to preach to the Indians because, as a matter of fact, he wasn't converted. He was an unconverted minister. And he came home to England from America with a very sad and heavy heart. And he found his way to a little group who were meeting in a street behind St. Paul's Cathedral. And they were studying Romans. And Wesley says that while they studied Romans, he felt his heart strangely warmed. And that was his conversion. And the autobiography of Wesley is called The Night of the Burning Heart. Because, of course, he rode everywhere preaching the gospel. The Night of the Burning Heart. And if you want your broken heart to turn into a burning heart, you must see Christ in all the scriptures and see Christ in the breaking of bread. Solomon said, better is the end of a thing than its beginning. In other words, the person you are at the end of the road is the person who matters. But there are two ends to the road to Emmaus. At the one end, there was a broken heart because it saw Jesus as a teacher only and because it was living in the past. And in place of that, God gave a burning heart that sees Christ in all the scriptures and that recognizes Christ in the breaking of bread. This is a story which speaks of God's power to take the broken heart and make it into a burning heart. That is what God offers you tonight. And it is in that spirit that we come to the supper now. Amen. May God add his blessing to the preaching of his word.